Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Well, hi, everyone. Welcome to an early Monday morning scoop. I'm actually showing you some live footage from the New Shepard launch. That is the spacecraft developed by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. And his fiance is actually speaking on screen right now, Lauren Sanchez. She just got back from her few minutes in space. I thought it would be interesting just to listen in briefly, and then we'll talk a little bit more about this.
To say you're going to do it, it's another thing to actually do it. And I know there's a phrase in your family that life takes off on the other side of fear. And here you are, just having landed back on Earth. And now you are officially Lauren Sanchez, already adding to your extensive resume, you are an astronaut. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very excited. I'm excited to share it with the world. And I'm so grateful to everyone here.
I love you. Go be with your family. But
process and download what just happened to me.
Well, get on in here, Amanda. Someone that can now articulate exactly how Lauren is feeling. Lauren being so candid about overcome with emotion. How are you feeling? I know, Amanda, this has been a dream of yours, a long-awaited dream. And now it is finally official. You are an astronaut. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. You know, I usually have nice words to say, but in this moment, I just want all survivors to know that you can heal. No dream is too wild. And that if it's so wild out there, like going to space, you can absolutely make it through and it can absolutely be possible.
You mentioned to us prior to going up, you said that you needed to go to space to heal. I know you're only a few minutes removed from this incredible experience. Do you feel healed?
You know, I had a zero G indicator that I didn't know if I would bring. And I ended up bringing it.
Okay. And explain for the folks at home that don't know what that means, what it is that you're holding.
Yes, the zero G indicator is something all astronauts have that floats once you hit space, lets you know you're there. I brought a promise that I wrote to myself. I've talked about that.
And share for what is this right here?
Yes, and this one I didn't know if I would bring, but I ended up bringing it and floating it, and it's the hospital van from the day. And, I got to honor her today, and I'm so grateful to the thousands of people, the engineers, the scientists, just everyone who has made this a reality.
And you also have written here, I know that you had this on your laptop, right?
Yes, that's right. And this is my zero G indicator, a promise I made to myself that if I were to pause my astronaut dreams and fight for rights, that one day I would return to her.
And it says, never, never give up. Yes. Well, those dreams are no longer on hold.
Yeah.
You are finally an astronaut.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
This moment with your family. And thank you for sharing it with
thank
us.
You.
Thank you, Amanda. Carrie Ann.
So that was Amanda Nguyen. And now these are different astronauts that are being interviewed. Well, I'm going to pause that. The term astronaut is a little bit controversial. So let's talk a little bit about this. The reason why there's a lot of press around this today, you're going to hear a lot about this, is because it's the first all-women space flight by Blue Origin. And so you had a lot of famous people on board this flight, including Katy Perry, the pop star. You had Gail King, the prominent American broadcaster, and a slew of others. Just for some clarity about what Amanda was talking about, Amanda is a survivor of sexual assault. It's something that she's advocated on behalf of victims. And so what she's talking about there is some of the things that she brought with her on this very brief flight to space. Now, what we're calling space is going above what's called the Kármán line, which is 62 miles up from Earth. And this is that, I don't say it's like an arbitrary line, but it's an arbitrary line for when space begins. And so this launch took place. In fact, I have some video. Let me go ahead and show it to you, because there is a bigger story here about 10, just commercial 9, space flight in 8, general. Let's take a
7,
listen to this.
6, 5, 4, command engine start, 2, 1, ignition. Liftoff. New Shepard has cleared the tower.
I mean, pretty amazing, isn't it? Just to see some of that happen on your screen. And it was a really good point. Kristen Fisher is also an American broadcaster who I worked with at Fox. Her mother and her father were astronauts. And so this has been her beat. I hope she's going to join us on Smarter News someday to talk a little bit about space. But one of the things she said as she's helping broadcast this event is she said, this really is about a bigger story about American space travel, whether it's tourism or something more strategic, whether it's national security or beyond. We look at these events and you can kind of, you know, shrug it off. Okay. A bunch of, you know, you got a pop star, you got a bunch of, you know, prominent women, but, in the grand scheme of everything that's happening in the world, you know, you could say, well, come on, this is just a media event. And yeah, it was a media event. Exactly. It was totally a media event by Blue Origin to get some attention to what they're doing, which are these very limited, brief moments in space for people that don't undergo training as astronauts. So that term astronaut, we have to be really careful. Did you know the word astronaut actually refers to a star sailor? Star sailor. That's what we're saying when we're saying astronaut. And it's the title given to those in NASA specifically. So there's been some controversy about using this term to talk about anyone that crosses into space, even for a brief moment, even just briefly into space. Are they actually an astronaut? Blue Origin is using that term. Others would disagree with that and say, no, wait a minute. In order to be an astronaut, you have to go through years and years of training. You're going to fly to space. You're going to be there for research. This is part of a broader plan. It's not just anybody can be an astronaut. I'll leave that to you to decide whether or not it's an appropriate term or not. I've never been to space. Maybe if I went to space, I would think, you know what? I kind of want that title. I mean, just, you know, be nice on the byline. Like a little in your bio, it's like, you know, journalist and astronaut. I don't know if it works, but it's one of those interesting word choice questions that come up as we evolve. You know, how are we going to apply that term? Who gets that title? For now, we're going to have these really interesting spokespeople for going into space. And they did something that no one's ever done before. It was this all-female space flight in this particular way with this particular technology. And so I would expect for you to see media on this for the next several days. And yes, there'll be those that will shrug it off as just a media event. But then I think we can encourage ourselves to look at it more about just space travel in general and the different, you know, technology that's available suddenly to us and think about what's going to be possible for our children. What is this actually going to look like? Are we going to do this every day? Are people going to go and they're just going to be able to go into space for a day? Is it going to happen so frequently that the price is going to drop dramatically? It's not going to be those that are in powerful positions. You and I could just opt one day. You know, why don't we go into space? Sort of like skydiving. You know, there's a place nearby that I could skydive. I drive regularly by it. I wonder, what is that day that I'm just going to pull to the side of the road and just do it? Believe me, I'll film it if I'm going to share it with you. But you never know what the week's going to hold. And that's what Scoop is about. We're going to set the foundation for the week ahead for the news that you need to know. This is very prominent news on a Monday. I expect you to see a lot of it. So I wanted to give you a little bit of a background on it. So I'll be curious your thoughts about the use of the term astronaut and, you know, what actually is legitimate spaceflight. So what do you guys think about that? Speaking of travel, there's going to be a lot of travel this week when it comes to Congress, and it's not going to be around Washington, D.C. At least that's not what we expect. So let me just kind of give you a lay of the land for the week ahead, because we're going to see something different when it comes to the news cycle, simply because Congress is not in session. So we have Passover, we have Easter, we have a lot going on. And so Congress is back in their home districts for the next 2 weeks. So the flurry of activity that we saw on Capitol Hill is not going to be there because they're going to be home. And so that's going to change some of the news that's delivered to us, simply because you don't have lawmakers all together talking and they're not talking in front of the camera. Now, any sort of event could call them back to DC. It would be rare, but it could happen. But let's talk a little bit about what we saw before they left. And then I want to tell you a little bit about what's going on at the White House, what we know. And sometimes these schedules can change. So one of the things that you probably heard a lot about last week is a budget deal being passed, and it was passed in the House. This is a big spending plan. Remember, we had to pass a very temporary solution to keep the government funded. And then there's this question always, are we going to have these, you know, huge sweeping budget bills? Are we going to do these temporary bills to keep the government up and going? Are we ever going to see spending cuts? You know, what sort of money are we going to give here and there? This is what this bill which has been referred to by Republicans and including President Trump as the big, beautiful bill, because it's a massive bill, massive spending bill. Now, the House of Representatives passed this bill, mostly along party lines, going into this break. The Senate has passed their own bill. And so you have two of these very separate spending bills that are going to have to be merged. That process is called reconciliation. And we expect that process to take place over the next several weeks. The timelines are vastly different. You can see reconciliation, if there's some sort of agreement that could take place, momentum perhaps, that would bring these bills together, that you could see a spending bill passed by the end of May. But a more pessimistic view, but maybe more realistic just because of time frame and the amount of work that needs to be done, is that it would have to be passed by September in order to prevent another sort of cycle of government shutdown. So this is not something that needs your immediate attention, but it's something that's out there that when you're hearing about, you know, potential cuts to Medicaid, what about our debt? What about raising our debt limit? All these things. These are different pieces of the same bill that are going to need to be worked out. And what will happen in the news is that different pieces, as lawmakers come back, will raise in prominence in negotiation and become a talking point in their own story. So just so you know, that's what's happening. As far as other legislation percolating for Congress, I'm going to get to one important one in just a moment. But that's just the lay of the land when it comes to spending. The White House, we're going to see a few different prominent world leaders visit the White House. So there's going to be a lot of attention at the White House when the Congress isn't there to balance things out. We have obviously three equal branches of government, but if Congress isn't actively there, then a lot of attention goes to the White House in Washington, D.C. And think about the press. You have a lot of press in Washington, D.C. for those that are trying to do their reporting. There's those that are assigned to the White House, those assigned to Congress, but a lot of focus will go back on the White House because they're present and they're there. And so that's going to absorb a lot more time, especially with what's going on with tariffs. And I'm going to play some sound for you in just a moment on the situation with tariffs. But visiting the White House today on Monday is the president of El Salvador. This has become an important partner from the president who is looking for ways to deter immigration, illegal immigration. And he says to remove people that shouldn't be in this country, that are gang members. And that's what transpired several weeks ago when we saw that plane flight full of what the White House said was gang members flown, Venezuelan gang members specifically, flown from the United States to El Salvador to enter into a very prominent prison there that's been controversial for questions about human rights from human rights organizations. Now, let's just pause that for a second. We know that there was a case because there was a Maryland man that a set of lawyers said should not have been removed, that he was mistakenly removed, that he didn't have a record. Now, the White House has pushed back on that and said different things about this individual. The Supreme Court came out last week and there was this flurry of activity about this particular case and essentially said, yes, the White House can use this law from the late 1700s to remove people from the country. And that is a power of the executive branch. However, people need that fit this category need to have a heads up. They need to have notice. And now another judge has issued, because it's going back and forth between courts. So it's this, in order for a case to mature to the Supreme Court or get involved because of an emergency appeal by the White House, it has to go through some lower courts. So a lower court judge has now said, this individual has to be back by Monday, today at midnight. This person that was removed by mistake. There's some question about that timeline. And the Supreme Court has said, well, you know, the executive branch can't, in order to meet that deadline, they can't just meet the deadline if there's foreign policy priorities that come in front of it. So there's still this question about, will this individual come back? How will they bring him back? What does that look like? And it's a story just to watch because it's one example of a question about a policy that's currently in place by this administration to remove people using this law and remove them to El Salvador. So we're in this area that we haven't really seen before when it comes to law. We haven't really seen this law challenged until this current situation right now in this particular way. And so while most of us in our everyday life and also in the news would like some certainty, a lot of this is very much evolving as different judges are looking at what's possible. But the meeting is happening between El Salvador's president and President Trump today at the White House. Another meeting to watch is going to be a meeting between the Prime Minister of Italy and President Trump. And what's interesting about Giorgia Meloni is that, and I hope I'm saying that correctly. I'm looking at her name. Just sometimes the way that things are presented, and it's, I don't speak Italian. I don't tell my Italian, my 100% Italian mother that, by the way. You know, I'm half Genovese. My mom's first generation Italian. So I should really know that. I actually studied in Florence. Like we should, sorry about that, guys. I mean, we all have good moments and bad moments. But this, what's really interesting about this relationship with Italy right now is the Prime Minister of Italy has a good relationship with the White House. And she's somewhat been a controversial figure in her own country because she was brought in kind of under this this momentum that was in part created by President Trump of a change of leadership that we've seen in Europe, going back to more traditional values in some ways and other ways not. And she says she's going to talk about tariffs. And so one of the things that we've seen in recent weeks, and I've heard even from European leaders, this is related to Ukraine, in fact, but I think it bears repeating here, is the question from some European leaders is, well, who's the one that's going to be able to speak to President Trump? Who are the European leaders that he likes to speak to? And how can they represent on this world stage for some of these bigger issues? She says, Prime Minister Meloni says she's going to talk about tariffs. And because she's a more friendly person to the White House, this could be interesting to watch on Thursday, because one of the things the European Union has proposed is just dropping tariffs to nothing for certain sectors. And that's one of the paths forward that some have suggested. Okay, well, let's just drop tariffs altogether. Like free market. Let's drop all the barriers. And especially for our allies, what could that actually look like? So I think that's something to watch on Thursday. In the meantime, I was listening, as you all know, I like listening to this podcast, the All In podcast. It's with some prominent business leaders. They've been more on the tech side. They seem to have a variety of different political points of view. Some have switched from Democrat to Republican or liberal to conservative. There was a member of this podcast that's now working as part of the administration, David Sachs. He's working more in the technology AI sort of area. But in their latest episode, why I want to play a portion for you is it includes some comments from a former very key economic advisor under President Clinton and President Obama, and David Sachs, who's currently working under President Trump. And this is just, they actually got into quite a debate about this. I'll put a link so you can listen to it. If you're really interested in the tariffs and the different philosophies about why we're here, where we are, and what this looks like, and taking you back a couple decades, this is a good conversation because it's with Larry Summers, who's been part of economic policy in the United States for years that now Republicans are pushing back on in this particular way. So it gets a little spicy. Is it a little spicy? It's a little bit spicy, but it's also very interesting. So I wanted to play just a short soundbite for you, just to get a little taste of what's going on with tariffs and the debates that are still happening. So let me go ahead and take a listen to this.
This is dangerous work with a sledgehammer on a pretty sensitive machine, which is the global economy, that's having really serious consequences.
And if I had told you on April 1st, that Donald Trump would find a way to get the entire world to eagerly embrace a 10% tariff on the American market, and not only would they not complain, but they'd actually be relieved that it was only 10%, you would have said that would be an April Fool's joke. If I had told you 8 days ago or 9 days ago that Trump would find a way to accelerate the United States' decoupling from China, which is something he's long wanted to do, and that Wall Street would basically breathe a sigh of relief over that, you would have said that there's no way that could happen. If I had told you 8 or 9 days ago that President Trump figured out a way to assert a presidential power in a way that gives America extraordinary leverage over virtually every country in the world, you would have said, well, I don't believe it. I don't, you know, what is that power? And he proceeded to do that. And now basically every country in the world, except for China, is coming to Washington seeking to negotiate a new trade deal for the United States on better terms for the U.S.
If you told me any of that a few days ago, I would have believed you, and I would have thought the consequences would be a substantially deteriorated American economy and a substantially less secure
United States. I don't think we know that. It's not-
Okay, so they go on and on like this. It was Larry Summers first. I should have mentioned that. David Sacks second. And so there's a lot of back and forth about what this, the latest basically week and a half really means for the U.S. economy moving forward. And there's a lot of good questions brought up here about, well, what can manufacturing look like? What does winning actually look like for the Trump administration here when it comes to tariffs? Think big picture to stepping away. To let's just talk about where we're starting the week. Where we're starting the week this week is vastly different than last week in this particular way. The markets are not quite, I'm looking at them right now, and they're going to change by the time that you hear this. You know, we're starting off the week in positive territory. It doesn't mean we're going to stay there. And it doesn't mean that new developments are not going to change that. But right now, the markets are starting off the week slightly calmer. There seems to be this sort of wait and see approach, which is if these negotiations are happening between countries and the White House, and if it is 90 countries, as one of the president's key advisors said yesterday in the Sunday shows, then what could that potentially look like? Could there actually be better terms? Is there more of an upside here that is being entertained than a downside, which is we're destroying global world order and expectation by saying that these tariffs or these trade terms are changing? So it's as if all of these different possibilities are still on the table. The reaction to it is a little bit more muted today, at least at this hour. And what will be important to watch here is what does the week look like? It's really not about a day. And maybe it's not about a week. Maybe it's about the next 90 days, the next 3 months, which is a long time to wait to see what these different terms of trade could look like. Why does this even matter? Let's always go back to that. Like, what's the big picture here? The big picture here is America has the number one economy in the world. We want to stay there. And the question is, are we on a sustainable path to maintain that? Some would say, yes, we were on a sustainable path. We didn't need to change anything. There are those that for years have said, no, these trade terms are not beneficial. And at a certain point, it's going to catch up to us. Who's right? Who's wrong? We don't know. But for us, for most of us, we've been living our life in this place where we have had a prominent role again on the global stage. And the stakes here or whether or not we're going to continue to have that prominent role. I was thinking a lot, and I know I brought it up a lot, but it was such an important trip for me to go to Normandy last year and really think about the period of World War II. And I keep on going back to that because so much of what we're experiencing now are policies that were set up in the aftermath of World War II, and we're raising questions about whether or not they still work. But we're of a generation, many of us, that we've enjoyed this current status as Americans. And again, the question is it sustainable? And what does it look like? So I just wanted to make sure that we talk a little bit about tariffs as far as brand new developments, you know, breaking news. This is what we need to know about tariffs right now. I mean, let's knock on wood, throw some salt over our shoulder, kiss our elbow, whatever you need, cross your heart. I don't know what you need to do. We don't have it right at this moment. Doesn't mean we won't have it later in the day. But I think it actually is notable we're starting off the week with not that huge burst of news that we've had in recent weeks. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the SAVE Act. I've gotten a lot of questions on this, and I want to make sure to address this. So SAVE Act, Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. It's called the SAVE Act. And really what this is about is Congress trying to pass a law that has been done in the House. It hasn't been done in the Senate. So it's not law of the land yet. It's still in this stage where it needs to go to the Senate and get approval, which, by the way, would be a little bit more of a hill to climb because of the dynamics there. But let's just talk about what it is, because I've received a lot of questions about this. There's been some worry that this particular law would prevent married women from voting. Okay, hold up. For everyone, like, wait a minute. Women can't vote anymore because of the SAVE Act? Let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, the SAVE Act, I don't mean to laugh, but I mean, the things that we have to deal with, I mean, the global economy potentially cratering, whether or not we're going to go to space, you know, what's happening with war and peace around the world. And then do we have to worry about our voting rights? Yes, we're going to worry about voting rights today, in part because this is new legislation that would require an additional ID when you register to vote. So right now, typically what you have to do is basically swear that you are who you are. There's not different states have different requirements. This would require a variety of different ID to show that you're actually an American citizen. Yes, there is research to show that there's not an overwhelming amount of non-American citizens voting that would change the course of an election. Absolutely. But there's still a concern by some that this is happening, or a concern that it could happen in the future. And so this is a reaction to that. So when we're talking about different IDs that you would be required to bring to show that you're a citizen, they would include a birth certificate, a passport, a naturalization form of some sort, a real ID of some sort. You know, that's a new ID that everyone's supposed to get. So in some capacity, we need one of these IDs to show that you're an American citizen. Now, as a married woman, my birth certificate does not have my married name. And so wait a minute. So I need a passport, but passports are expensive and millions of people don't have a passport. For those that have passports, you think, well, wait a minute, doesn't ever, no. Tens of millions of Americans actually don't have a passport. So does that mean that married women, unless they have a passport, they're not able to show that they're actually the name that they say they are and are actually an American citizen? Congresswoman Ilhan Omar had this to say about this bill, and she's voicing this concern.
I voted on the SAFE Act to make sure effectively, if you are a woman, you are married, you changed your name, and it doesn't match what is on your birth certificate, you are not going to be able to vote. If you are disabled and you can't physically get to an office to register, you are no longer going to be able to register online. This is not about creating election integrity. It is about disenfranchisement and choosing who can vote and who cannot. And it is really important that we create access for every citizen in this country to have the ability to cast their ballot. So I voted no.
Okay, well articulated there, her point of what her concerns are. Here's the White House responding to a question about this just on Friday.
And many married women, soon to be married women, are concerned that the new voter ID requirements may inhibit their access to the polls. What assurances can you give women voters in America to ease their concerns?
Sure. Well, the SAVE Act, as you mentioned, was passed by the House yesterday. This is the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act. I believe I'm getting that correct. And this act is a common sense measure. It would require proof of citizenship for voting in our elections. The Democrats have been fear-mongering about this bill, have been saying that married women, if their name has changed, they didn't change it on their identification, would not be able to vote. That is complete fallacy. There are outlined in the bill about how to avoid that. The president very much supports a common sense solution to ensuring that only citizens can engage in our elections. This is critical to improving the integrity of our elections and also the trust that American citizens need to have in our electoral process. So the president supports this bill, and that is a myth that has been proven wrong by the text of this bill. And I believe some of the co-sponsors of the bill have been very vocal in addressing that. And certainly I myself, as a married woman, would not stand before this podium if the president did not support such a common sense measure.
Okay. First of all, can we just address the fact that, I mean, if you're a married woman, the stuff you have to change your name and I still have a credit card that still has my maiden name on it because I have to send them a marriage license. I mean, this is something my husband does not need to worry about, first of all. So I just want to say for the record, there are extra errands that immediately start when you are a wife. And I don't know if I like them. All right. I know there's like easy, and maybe AI is going to fix this all for the future generations, but it's a pain just so everybody knows what it's really like now. So what gives? Like, are married women not going to be able to, what is this about? So again, what this bill would do is it would replace an act that was passed in 1993, the National Voter Registration Act, which allows us to affirm that we're a citizen if we just sign a declaration that says that we are. We don't need to prove it. That was passed in the 1990s. This would update it and say, guess what? You do need to prove it. There is some language in the bill that says states are going to have to figure out what processes that they would use. Again, because states are in control of their elections. We know this because of an election year. We know that states run their own elections. There's no federal government running a broad election. The states are running the federal and state and local elections. And so states would have to figure out what additional documentation they would accept if there's a discrepancy about proof of citizenship. So this bill is not settled. It's not the law of the land. There is some language in it that would allow for additional documentation depending on your state. And by the way, your experience voting really depends on your state right now. So some of you are asking on the chat, wait a minute, I had to bring my ID, or you're talking about what it's like to vote. Well, it's very different. We don't have similar experiences. And so one of the things that this legislation would do is it would set like a baseline. You need some form of documentation that you're a citizen, and then up to the states for what additional documentation they would accept. So it could look vastly different depending on the state. Now, this bill has passed in the House. It has not passed in the Senate. In order for this bill to progress to an actual vote, it would need to pass through filibuster, which would mean that it would need enough Democrats to say, similarly to this past spending bill, when there was this massive debate about whether or not the Senate would consider the spending bill, you would need enough Democrats to say, okay, fine, we'll vote to let this legislation go forward to a vote on the floor. And there's a risk for Democrats to do that because Republicans have the majority. So in order for a bill to pass and you need a simple majority, if you allow it to progress, you're more or less allowing the bill to pass, unless Republicans come out and say, I don't like this. By the way, that could absolutely happen with this because of this controversy that's emerged. And maybe some new language that would be a little bit more specific would have to be put in. So nothing's happening right now in that this isn't changing for you in the immediate. It's still in a proposal state. It has passed the House. It would need to pass the Senate. And there is some room for further documentation. There's also, you know, always the opportunity for the opposite, which is maybe it gets more strict, you know. The requirements are, I'm just trying to entertain what could be possible. You know, could we see a legislation that would be very specific and would say that you would need these three things, and if you don't have these three forms of documentation, then you can't vote? Maybe, but I think it would be challenged because the states have the right. This is in the Constitution to run their own elections. So it would seem, based on that constitutional requirement, that there needs to be room for states to decide. And so nice try, guys, trying to keep us out from voting. Okay, all you married men out there, men in general, the patriarchy trying to keep women down. Not happening right now. I don't mean to laugh. I'm like, when I saw this, I thought, is this really happening? Of all things, this is what, now, didn't we go through women's suffrage? What's happening here? So I had to look through it myself. And so far I walk away with, let's see where this legislation goes. Let's see what other ideas would come up for additional documentation. And also, I'm still mad at my husband for not having to change his name and going through all of that. So there you go. That's my smarter take for you today. I don't mean to laugh. I mean, it's just like, oh, of all the things that we need to worry about right now, you know, I'm trying to lighten the load for you. And instead I'm like, let's talk about all these horrible things that could potentially happen. Does anyone have any questions right now for any news that you see in front of you that you want to talk a little bit about? I wanted to share with you one story that I thought was very powerful this weekend. And unfortunately, I just have to grab the sound again because it's from Governor Josh Shapiro. Something happened this weekend that was very surprising. We only have 50 governors. So when something happens to a governor, Republican, Democrat, whatever state, doesn't really matter. Governor Josh Shapiro is a very prominent national figure. He's part of a key state in the country when it comes to elections. He's also a Democrat that has good relationships with Republicans. This is very typical of Pennsylvania politics because Pennsylvania is such a state that has such a mixture of conservative and liberal powerful voices. And so he's really looked at as being potentially a key leader for the Democrat Party, but really a national figure. And so he also happens to be Jewish. And he was hosting a Passover celebration at the governor's mansion. Passover started on Saturday. And we don't know all the particulars right now. We just know that a 38-year-old man was able to somehow breach the fence of this residence and sneak into the house in the middle of the night, set it on fire while his family was still there. There was time for them to get out. Security responded right away. They knew there was a breach. They just couldn't find the person. And actually, this 38-year-old was able to leave without being apprehended. He was apprehended later. He's under arrest. He's charged with attempted murder. It's going to be a very serious case. But some of the things that Josh Shapiro had to say about this incident and I want to grab it for you right now, are really powerful, and I want to play part of it for you. So let me go ahead and play some of this sound.
It's important to show not just Pennsylvania, but the whole country, you're not going to be fearful.
I'm not fearful. I'm obviously emotional. I'm worried about my family. I want my kids to be okay. When we were in the state dining room last night, gathered with the community and family and friends, we told the story of Passover, and it's a story of going from bondage, from slavery, into freedom. I think it's an important story, both literally and figuratively, to tell. And I refuse to be trapped by the bondage that someone attempts to put on me by attacking us as they did here last night. I refuse to let anyone who had evil intentions like that stop me from doing the work that I love, stop me from being a leader of this Commonwealth and looking out for all Pennsylvanians. I will not be deterred in my work, and I will not be afraid to do that work.
That was a really powerful statement I wanted to share with you just as we finish up here, because it brings us back to always what matters, which is our families, what we're called to do as part of this life, our communities, you know, whether or not we're safe, whether or not we're healthy and happy. I mean, they're very basic things that when we look across the news, we're wondering, well, why does this all matter? You know, these are the reasons why these things matter. They're very simple, but they're important. And oftentimes we don't pull it out of enough stories. I enjoy learning a little bit more about Passover. My family celebrates Easter, and these holidays intersect. And so it was a really nice way, I thought, that Governor Shapiro drew in the story of Passover and talked a little bit about it in relation to what he's feeling right now. It's something that we don't often see, this sort of authentic emotion. Sometimes we don't often see from politicians. So I thought it was an important moment just to share with you. And I'm gonna close up there. One of the things Oprah said, don't roll your eyes. I know some people roll their eyes with Oprah. We gotta have our Oprah moment just for a second. She was asked about seeing her best friend Gail go into space. And I thought what she said was so important. She said, and it's because Gail King, by the way, just taking this full circle, is afraid to fly. She doesn't like being on a plane, let alone like she's flying into space 62 miles up. She doesn't like being on a normal airplane. How is she going to do this? She was actually very afraid, and you could see it in her face as she was going to this adventure. You could just tell she was very nervous. We all know what that's like to be truly afraid of something. And one of the things Oprah said, she said, and I hope I got this quote directly, was live, so I was writing it down. Life is to grow into the fullest expression of yourself. Life is to grow into the fullest expression of yourself. And I thought, what an amazing way to talk about why she thought it was important for her friend to do it, because it's about evolving and changing and growing into the fullest expression of yourself. So I offer you that today as we launch into a new week about ways that we can grow into the fullest expression of ourselves. And I think Smarter News, by the way, thank you. I'm so grateful for this community. It's been an expression of an evolution in journalism, and also an important expression for me that we could show that this can work, that nonpartisan news is powerful, matters, is relevant to your life, and we can do it in a different way. And we're still working out kinks on a regular basis, but it's an expression of something, of values, of freedom of the press, the importance of the individual to make up their own mind, chart their own course in America. It's all part of it. And part of the reason why I had to do this broadcast early, and I'm sure I'll share some more of this down the line. I have a family member that's going through something, and I'm going to be, I've been attending doctor's appointments. And one of the sort of, when you stop and listen to what's the messages in your life, just repeatedly, the messages in my life this year have been life is short, life is short, life is short, life is short, life is, like coming in all these different angles. And so that's one of the reasons why I had to film scoop broadcast a little bit early, just to make sure that I'm there, because it's important to be there in these moments and just show up. So thank you for adjusting your schedule for me. I appreciate that. The next couple of weeks might look a little funky, because we do have some holidays, and I'm going to keep you posted for the Monday after Easter. I know some of you have that off as a holiday, and so I don't like giving you extra work on a holiday. So we may adjust Scoop to be on a Tuesday if we need a second to kind of get back in the swing of things. But I love our opportunities to join each other live. And if you'd like more opportunities to do this, let's get together more and actually have coffee and talk through a couple of things. So Thank you for this abbreviated scoop today, abbreviated and early, but I think we got a lot of work done. And I'm going to take up that issue about changing my name again with my husband when he gets home tonight. He doesn't know that's coming. He thinks he's just having a regular day. I'm like, guess what? When I get home, we're going to talk about this, what I uncovered for Smarter News. And also, I need some penance for what I've had to endure as a wife with my name. And also, I'd like to congratulate Birdie. Lady Bird Johnson Babin is on our floor, my news hound, my puppy that destroyed our white couch last week. She's been a very good audience member. You probably have heard her snoring a little bit, which doesn't give me a boost of confidence, but I feel like is part of doing news a little bit differently. So have a great day, guys. We'll see you with more on social media channels throughout the week, our quick hits as well. We have a special series coming up that I'm excited about to share with you this week, and more news on smarternews.com. Thank you for building a solution in news, and I'll see you soon. Bye.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.